what I want any old time. I said I'm free. Welcome back to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky, joined in studio by Kathleen LaCrone.
Hello.
Merry Christmas,
Merry
Kathleen.
Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
It's been, how was your Christmas?
What'd
you do?
My Christmas was wonderful. Let's see. Christmas morning, we woke up, and of course, I have an 11-year-old son and my mother and father with me, and so we opened up our presents, and then we had a breakfast, and then we went over to my sister-in-law's and my brother, who is in Afghanistan, and we got to talk to him by Skype, which is way cool, and said Merry Christmas to my brother. It was about 11 o'clock at night there in Afghanistan, and then we proceeded to have the biggest roast beast we could find, and Cindy Lou Who wasn't there, but we still ate a ton and watched movies. I think that's what you do, is you just eat a lot and sit in front of the television, and then everybody went home, and we drove through the neighborhoods and looked at Christmas lights and came home.
That's fantastic.
I know.
Normally for my tribe, Christmas means a Chinese restaurant. Although we stayed home last night as well. But, you know, I've gone out of my way, you know, everywhere on my website, wherever, to make sure I say Merry Christmas
Merry
to
Christmas.
All of my Christian friends and listeners and whatever. This is a topic that comes up frequently in all kinds of different places, whether it's aggressive atheists trying to make a point or you know, a Jew or Hindu or someone for some reason maybe afraid of saying Merry Christmas, but I'm not afraid.
I'm not afraid either. And I'm not afraid to say, you know, not only just Merry Christmas, but Happy Hanukkah and so forth. I think we should just celebrate the diversity within our culture, but in a healthy way, not diversity to the extent of excluding others for their beliefs. And I think that's what happens.
I completely agree. So I hope everybody had a fantastic Christmas. And we're actually going to talk a little bit about a Wall Street Journal article that I just printed out entitled "Do Christians Overemphasize Christmas?" We'll talk about that a little later in the show, and maybe
sure.
I'll learn a few things from from you. Before we get into some of that, there's a little bit of news of the week that I wanted to do. One just very interesting story. A glass vial stopped with a cork during the Civil War has been opened, revealing a coded message to the desperate Confederate commander in Vicksburg on the day the Mississippi fell to Union forces 147 years ago. And this little bottle, less than 2 inches long, has been in a museum of the Confederacy, the Museum of the Confederacy, and it's been in the museum since 1896, and they opened it, and they got this coded message out, and they gave it to a guy who was a retired CIA code breaker, and it had a very basic sort of code in it, and the guy was actually said it wasn't difficult. I had fun with it, and it took me longer than I should have, but it was a amazing piece of history. The note says, I can't help you, and I have no troops, no supplies, and no way to get there. Very, very interesting. Actually, I guess that's not the literal text of the quote. Here's the literal text. "General Pemberton, you can expect no help from this side of the river. Let General Johnston know, if possible, when you can attack the same point on the enemy's lines." And it goes on from there. But basically, the message shows that they had no idea that the Confederacy was just about to suffer a huge defeat within hours of this. Anyway, what an amazing thing to open a bottle that's, you know, from the Civil War and decode a message.
And amazing for the people who are, you know, now in 2010 just finding out that the Confederacy is doomed.
Or as my father always said, does your Chinese cookie say help? I'm being held captive in a Chinese cookie factory. That's what the fortune always says. At least it didn't say that in the bottle. Help! Come rescue me.
And speaking of American things which date from a century or more ago, Hugh Hefner has...
He has
become engaged to another playmate.
Why?
Who was she was December 2009 Playboy playmate, in case any of you want to go
so December
try to
2010
find that.
Is not far behind.
So Hefner is 84 and his fiance named Crystal Harris is 24, and I will offer no further comment on that.
Merry Christmas.
There you go.
Okay.
What else? Bristol Palin bought a house in Maricopa, Arizona, just outside of Phoenix, for $172,000 in cash. The house sold a few years ago for $330,000. Everyone's wondering what she's going to do down there in Maricopa, Arizona. Whether, you know, is her mom going to come hang out? Nobody knows. Anyway, it's got the town all abuzz, to use the New York Times expression. That's Phoenix abuzz as a Palin buys a home nearby.
My sister-in-law lives down there in Maricopa County, and all they can talk about is the sheriff, of course. The sheriff of Maricopa County.
Joe Arpaio.
I think we need to write a song. I think there has been many a song written about that man.
That guy is something else. He's certainly a hero on the right and in the anti-amnesty movement,
yes,
here in America, as well he should be. I should mention Joshua Scharf behind the glass. I don't know if I introduced Joshua earlier in the show. If you want to join our conversation, 303-696-1971 is our number here in the studio. You can shoot me an email. I created a new email address.
Don't shoot the sheriff, though. You can shoot him an email.
That's right. New email address, ross@backboneradio.net. Don't forget .net, not .com. ross@backboneradio.net. And if you want to reach Joshua, joshua@backboneradio.net will work to reach him. And you can send me an instant message as well on the AOL instant messenger screen name Ross Putin, or through my website at rossputin.com. Okay, after all that shameless self-promotion, you guys each went to the movies over the past few days, and I want to talk about that a little bit. I should also mention we expect to have Congressman Mike Kaufman join the show a little bit later this hour. Not sure how long he'll stay with us, at least half an hour, but maybe we'll try to get him to stay longer. Anyway, start with some movies, because we never get to do a little light entertainment like that.
Movie
and Christmas
review.
Weekend would be a good time. So let's start with you, Kathleen.
Well, I have a feeling I'm the only one in the group that has gone to see the new Chronicles of Narnia, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And it was very exciting because my son, as sort of a reward for good grades, good behavior, we went to actually the 12:01 showing on a Thursday night, and he had school the next day. Believe it or not, I can't believe I did that. My parents would have never done that. Hi, Mom and Dad. They're listening, by the way.
Hi, Mom and Dad.
I know. Hi, Mom and Dad. And so we went inside, and it was funny because we were so excited. We thought it was going to be exceptionally crowded, and it was me, my son, and two other people. So it wasn't that crowded, but it was an excellent movie. Lots and lots of good symbolism with the Christian faith, talking about Christmas and so forth. And I rather enjoyed it. Of course, it didn't follow the book as closely as the other ones had, but it was still exceptional. And the graphics, the cinematography is fantastic.
Is this the third Narnia movie?
It is. It's the third Narnia movie. And I don't think it's the third in the series of books. Is it the third? Oh, I can't remember.
He didn't write them in chronological order.
Oh, that's right.
So it's the third in order that he wrote them.
Yeah. But not third in the actually, yeah. And it was awesome. I actually got to call into another radio show and give my presse, I guess, and talk about how wonderful the movie was with one of the characters in the book or in the movie had to go through a whole series of redemption, and he had become a very sorrowful little boy, and he was very disrespectful and just a horrible little boy. And in the movie, he turns into a dragon, and it symbolizes the carnal nature taking over our bodies, over ourselves, our souls. And he tried everything he could to redeem himself, and in the end, he could not. And that is the story of Christ in the birth of the Christ child, is that he has come to redeem us, and how Aslan was the only way that this little boy could turn back into a boy. And then my favorite line is, "I made a better dragon than I did a boy." And that's the way it is with all of us. You know, sometimes we get into that carnal nature and we end up being a worse human than we need to be. And
so I assume you've seen the other two movies
I have,
as well.
Yeah.
And how does this compare? Because I haven't seen
either of them. So
how does this compare?
This one is, I think, better in terms of the graphics, but the symbolism is much more. But I think the first one is always going to capture imagination because it's always the first. It's just like any of the Star Wars movies. You know, you always remember the first one. But certainly I think that this one was equally as good, if not better, in terms of the Christian symbolism that was in it. So I really enjoyed it. I also went and saw Tron. You know, you got to get those kinds of movies in. And so Tron, I did not see it in 3D. In fact, it was funny. My parents went to go check on the movie and everything, and the woman at the the little booth said, don't see it in 3D. Don't waste your money. And I thought, well, okay. We're not going to waste our money on that. So it was good to see. It was lots of action packed. And of course, I remember the first Tron.
Well, let's, you know, we got to hit a break right now. So let's talk about Tron and yeah, Blast from the Past,
yes.
I guess, when we get back from this break here on Backbone Radio on News Talk 710 KNUS and 1460 KZNT. Stay with us.
Backbone Radio.
An old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed...
Welcome back to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky, joined in studio by Kathleen the Crone, behind the glass, Joshua Sharp. And we are very pleased to have with us, and a segment early, so bonus for us, Congressman Mike Kaufman. Welcome. Merry Christmas. Welcome home.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
What a remarkable lame duck session you've been through.
It was that duck was quacking.
You know what? Before we get into all of that, one thing I want to ask you about. Last week, the House had just passed, the Senate had passed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I had Congressman Jared Polis on the show, and you can presume what his position is on that. And I wanted to get your take on the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, especially you're affiliated with the Marines, as I recall. And the Commandant of the Marines is probably the most aggressive of all of the service chiefs against the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And so I wanted to get your take on it.
Well, I served in both the Army and the Marine Corps, Infantry Army, Infantry Officer, Marine Corps. What my concern was, and I asked for additional information from the study that I think that they could have easily have broken down and given it to me, that they certainly had, and that was a breakdown as to those soldiers and Marines in the tip of the spear, infantry, Army, Infantry, Marine Corps, non-commissioned officer, officer, you know, tell me what those are, because those are the folks taking the casualties right now, and they never got it to me. And so I would have liked to have seen them address the challenges and saying, this is how we're going to deal with this. I think that most of the military, it's probably going to be fine. Because most of the jobs, quite frankly, in the military are not that kind of ground combat team that requires that interdependency for survival. And that we have chosen, as a matter of policy, not to interject sexuality, not to interject heterosexuality in those units by having men and women there. And I think the same thing holds true here. Don't interject sexuality in the form of homosexuality. Not because they wouldn't be good soldiers and Marines. I think they would be just as good as anybody else. But I think that is the one unique area that I served in that I'm concerned about. I don't know if it was addressed, but it passed. And they're going to implement it, and we'll see what happens.
I mean, I agree with your take. You know, it was interesting. I hadn't thought about it, and I think maybe it's projection, but as a male, and having lived, I lived on Camp Pendleton when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. My parents were both Navy officers. And when the subject comes up, I guess because I'm a guy, and you're thinking about gays in the military, you know, think about gay guys. But a friend of mine who was a Navy intel officer said, really, the majority of homosexuals in the military are women. And I don't know whether you feel the same way, but to me that makes the problem a little bit less in the sense that they're probably less likely to be in tip of the spear units.
I think that's true.
So okay, are we done with DADT?
Yeah, I think we're gonna. You know it was that when President Clinton moved forward with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it was only a matter of time that the system would collapse on its own. Because you're saying to somebody that it's okay for you to serve, just don't admit your sexual orientation. I mean, that in itself is not sustainable.
I agree with you.
Well, I just think that the political implications are amazing because here we had a President Clinton who was a Democrat, is a Democrat, worked so hard as a Democrat, and then all of a sudden we have this other new Democrat who comes in and says that what he did was wrong. And I just think that the political implications of the I don't know. The butting of heads is amazing to me, and how at one time something was okay and now it's not, and how, you know, just the movement itself. I don't know.
The original law wasn't exactly what Bill Clinton wanted. Congress moved hard. Right. Clinton wanted to do more like what Obama wanted to do.
Right.
Congress did what they did. So it wasn't exactly Obama going against Clinton.
It's just also the metamorphosis you can see in, 25 years of our culture, how it's becoming more...
Well, and then Obama comes out and says, just like 2 days later, that his view on gay marriage is evolving. I mean, you think that's... I mean, it's not going to go anywhere in a Republican majority Congress, but, I mean, do you have any sense of that issue of gay marriage? Is that going to be accepted in the next decade in the U.S.?
I don't... You know, our culture is changing, and it's irrespective of what I think. I think that on the issue of gay rights, America is becoming more open. But the interesting thing is on the issue of abortion, America is becoming actually more conservative.
Right.
More pro-life on that side, but more pro-gay rights on the other side. So it's interesting to see how our culture is falling out.
And those don't have to be mutually exclusive. I mean, those issues don't necessarily, you know, you don't have to be, it makes sense to me that you could be becoming more pro-life and becoming more, you know, tolerant of people who are already alive doing what they want to do.
I think that the abortion question is that, I think to the issue of gay rights, I think the media is having a lot to do with changing the culture, where there's always shows out there that show that as normal behavior. And I think particularly the younger generation, that's their view of it. And I think that, but I think that medical technology has changed on the question of abortion, where the fetus is now a patient.
Yeah.
And when I meet with parents and they show me the first picture of their child, it's often an ultra scan. And so I think that the view of abortion
Well,
is
and
changing.
It's also because, you know, you have these 12, 13-year-old kids who say, oh, that's my brother. And his picture's hanging on the refrigerator and he's little, you know, the size of a pinhead, basically, you know. So I think that the technology is really what's driving becoming more pro-life, because kids are seeing their brothers and sisters as human beings before they're even born as well. But I think what's happening, though, is because our culture has more television shows and more acceptance of it, that lifestyle of gays is becoming much more accepted. So we have extremes on both ends. Technology is capturing our hearts and minds and the sense of abortion, but it's also technology allowing us to see things on television and stuff much more readily that is accepting of different lifestyles.
And the other impact of technology, you know, for me, and I'm pro-choice, but I'm not, doesn't mean I like abortion. And so one of the issues that came up in discussions a lot was this question of viability of the fetus, right? And you know, maybe in my mind, maybe abortion is okay before the fetus is viable and maybe not so okay after. And I'm not asking you guys to even a comment. I know you're not with me on that. But my point is technology is moving the viability earlier and earlier and earlier, almost to the point where it's hard to define anymore. I mean, a premature baby that would not have survived 5 minutes some years ago could survive to 100 years old with the technology that we have now. It's making a big difference.
Sure, absolutely. I have a very handicapped niece, and she would have been probably, you know, had died several years ago, but because of technology, she's able to stay alive now. So you're right, that technology is taking us in all kinds of extremes. And I think also the technology, in a way, is allowing those that may be their sexual orientation may be gay in the military, now they can serve in a different place because they don't necessarily have to be in those combat roles either. So that brings us back to the whole idea of technology and accepting culture.
10 seconds, Mike.
Well, the interesting thing, when I was in the first Gulf War and I was in the infantry, there was a medical doctor who was clearly, I think, gay. And, you know, none of the Marines cared because, you know, we wouldn't want to with us in the foxholes, but the notion of having some guy with his knuckles dragging on the ground cutting on you, we wanted that sensitive guy. God bless him, he was it.
When we come back after this break, we're going to talk with Mike Kaufman about whether the apparent everybody getting along so well, for good or bad, in the lame duck session is likely to be carried through to the next Congress. So stay with us right here on Backbone Radio.